Welcome to the All Bodies Nutrition Podcast. I am your host, Delaney Agresta, and I am a weight-inclusive registered dietitian. I started this podcast to help people like you heal their relationship with their bodies and food. Each week, there is a new episode that talks about different topics surrounding eating disorder recovery, diet culture, weight inclusivity, and more. So stay tuned, and thanks for listening. Thank you so much, Erica, for coming on. This is Erica Bryant. She is a high school teacher coming all the way from California, and I'm so excited to have her on the podcast. Erica, thank you so much.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
I'm so glad that we were able to connect, and like I talk with all my guests, it's always so great to connect with individuals who, you know, I admire from looking at like their social media pages and like the content that they promote. And I think it's just so cool, you know, that you not only have a full-time job, but, you know, you make such great content. So how did you get started in this space?
How did I get started? Posting online or just, both. So let's see, a couple, what was this? Maybe, 2014, sort of, you know, trauma peaked. I've been through some things. I kind of been through the ringer, and I started out in the gym. I was doing this thing called Nine Round, and it's like kickboxing meets circuit training, high intensity circuit training. And so I was doing that. And there I connected with someone who would go on to be my trainer. And at the time, my goal was to lose weight. So I was counting calories, deficit, you know, eating or whatever you want to call it. And we were doing weight training as a way to help with losing weight. And then I realized, oh, I'm actually kind of good at it, you know? And so we started lifting heavy and we started flipping tires, and I even got to use the sledgehammer a couple times. So like slowly it kind of took on this a whole other kind of life of its own, where I was no longer looking to lose weight, but I was actually having fun. I just started I turned the camera on during sessions and just hit record and started posting stuff. And I think what resonates with people is seeing someone who looks like them accomplishing something. And so then it's like, oh, there is room for me in this space. I can do these things too. So
I think that's so cool, and it's so important. And like your story sounds like a lot of individuals, myself included, where like I, you know, was pursuing intentional weight loss, and then I found myself in the midst of binge eating disorder. And then I, you know, came to this place where I was like, listen, like, I'm just going to stay the way that I am. I'm not going to keep worrying about weighing myself and counting carbs and not eating dessert. And then I would end up binging in my car by myself and throwing out all the remnants because I was so embarrassed and I never told anyone about it. And this was prior to me becoming a dietitian, but my journey through figuring out, I guess, my place in this space as a weight inclusive dietitian was like a very long journey, which we don't need to get in. And the listeners already probably have listened to those episodes. But did you find that, you know, during that space, during that time when you sought out like training and this individual was giving you like calorie, like meal plans or whatever, counting macros or whatever it was, did you find that you ever struggled with like your relationship with food in terms of like disordered eating or an eating disorder?
Well, at the time it was working, right? So I didn't really, not only was it working, but that's what I had I'd internalized it as that is what you do. Like, yeah. I'm fat. I'm not supposed to be. I need to, you know what I mean? Like, this is what I've learned over the years. I was a chubby kid. I was a fat teen, a fat adult. And so you internalize these things, and it was working. The pounds were coming off. And so I didn't really think about it. It's not until, like, in retrospect where I'm like, oh, that was bananas. You know what I mean? Yeah, it was a complete, like, my relationship with food, it was just this hyper fixation on these numbers. And it would, if things didn't match up, if the weight wasn't coming off as fast as I thought it was, you know, then that would freak me out. And then I would stress eat, and it just became this really strange spiral. And so what was really great about my trainer is that they were able to adjust as well. And their approach to, like, to health and fitness was evolving with me. And so we were able to, like, set goals that had nothing to do with weight. And so instead of focusing on, you know, taking my measurements or stepping on a scale, it was, okay, here's my PR for my deadlift, and like, let's work on that. So
that's honestly amazing. And, like, a round of applause to them, because it is so infrequent that I ever hear of trainers even understanding that. And I mean, in terms of, like, their scope of practice, they really shouldn't be kind of giving out meal plans and macros and things like that. And that's unfortunately part of some of the issues, especially when you see on social media. And I'm sure you've been on, like, TikTok or Instagram, where you just get these, like, trainers saying, like, oh, you want to lose belly fat in 5 minutes? Drink this, like, lemon water and stand upside down for 3 hours. Like, you know, like, they tell you, like, oh, these seed oils are everything and they're evil. And, you know, it's just, it's a lot of fear mongering, and it's honestly not an inclusive space.
Yeah.
And, you know,
every,
like,
time I would post a video. Oh, sorry.
No, please.
No, I would post a video of whatever we were doing for the workout, and then my DMs would be filled with, you know, internet trainers who were, like, wanting to, you know, help me, you know, lose weight. And I'm like, you don't even know that that's my goal. Like, you don't know anything. You just hopped up in here because saw a fat person
like
in the gym, and you're, like, thinking that you're about to you know, come up on a new client. Yeah.
Which, not to mention, when you're lifting that heavy of weight, and we're not talking 50 pounds here, right? Like, where are your PRs?
Oh,
now?
Gosh.
Or where?
So I haven't been a PR in a long time, because unfortunately my trainer and I don't think I've processed it yet, but they relocated and they moved back home. Yeah. So I've been in the process of figuring out what to do. It's very hard, because, like you said, trying to find someone who, like, not only about their working style, but someone who can conceptualize health and fitness in an inclusive way that makes you, like, that empowers you, is so hard to find. Sorry, I forgot the question.
No. So I was saying you haven't really had the
PR
to train, because when I talk about, like, what you're lifting and what you see most conventional women on social media lifting, they're not lifting anything. No offense to them. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but, like, when we talk about what you're lifting, it's some heavy duty stuff.
You know, there are. I wish that when I was a kid, I would have, that, like, social media in this way, like, could have been a thing, because for all the craziness, I was like, wait, like this woman is like, she's bench pressing what? Like I'm on social media and I'm seeing these women, you know, just, I don't even know, find strength from I don't know where. And they're doing these really amazing things. So then I would go back to the gym and to my trainer and I'd be like, okay, look, like, let's, I want to do this. I want to flip the tractor tire. So yeah, I think my last PR, I was at like, for a squat, it was like maybe 370, I think.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, to me, it's always like, it's hard to explain, like, the way that lifting feels is like, I can't really explain it. Like, I personally had, for my whole entire life, a terrible relationship with movement. And I was like literally forced by my mother to like go to the gym when I was 12 years old. Like I hated it. And so like, I did the whole thing, Weight Watchers, like all the diets, Special K, like whatever, which was horrendous. But I didn't realize that I loved lifting until much later in life. I would say I started lifting in 2016. And then unfortunately with the pandemic, it kind of like messed me up, because when you're used to lifting a certain amount and like leg pressing a certain amount, you can't replicate that at home with my little dumbbells.
Yeah. That was my problem as well. I was like, okay, I've got these resistance bands.
Yeah. And it's like, wait, what is this? Why? What? Like, you know, we all had to kind of pivot, and it was scary to go back into the gym, you know, and the whole thing. So we're not going to relive that necessarily, but you know, it took me a while to kind of get back into it. So, but the point, what was my point? I forgot what my point was. So the point that I was making in terms of like where you were, with the amount of weight that you were lifting, right? Coupling that concept with you under eating is like terrifying to me, you know, like as a dietitian, I'm like, but your body needs the calories, it needs the carbs, it needs the protein. You have to like refuel your, you know, your cells and your muscle cells. And, you know, unfortunately, like when we equate as someone in a larger size body, moving their body, they're like, oh, well, like, you know, you should be eating in a deficit, right? Because, oh, like you have to pursue fitness. Like that's like the ultimate goal. But like, how can you lift this your best when you're under fueling yourself?
And it's, I think, and I feel like you would probably know this better than I do, given your profession, but it's like, if a person with a smaller body was saying, I'm counting calories, I'm starving myself, I'm working out multiple times in a day, it would send up, would start to send up red flags to people that somebody, that there's a potential eating disorder, you know, something like that going on. Mm-hmm. And then when you are fat and you're doing those things, people are applauding you for it, or they're like, oh, good for you. Mm-hmm. Because, well, that's what you're supposed to be doing, because at the very least, even if you don't become thin, I feel like people want you to want to be thin. You know what I mean? Like they want you to be trying to be thin. And if you don't do that, then everybody's looking at you like you're, you know.
You cuckoo. Hit the nail on the head. And there is this amazing creator on social media. She's a trainer. She's called the Fat Athlete, and she helps women in any size body, especially larger size body, learn how to start running and how to like understand that like a lot of the you know, the misconceptions about what it means to run in a larger body and not pursuing intentional weight loss. And she was on another podcast, and she said something along the lines of like, I don't get a lot of hate, and I'm just like paraphrasing what she said. Like I personally don't get a lot of hate because my whole page is me like showing the workouts because I'm a quote unquote good fatty. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So like, if you are like going through the motions of like, oh, well, I'm drinking my water and I'm making a smoothie and I'm running every day, even if you don't necessarily achieve like a smaller size, you're still like doing the thing. Mm-hmm. And it's so gross and it's disgusting and it makes me like ick. And so like I recently just put up a post on Instagram where I was like, you don't owe your health to anyone, right? Because like everyone assumes like, okay, if you live in a larger size body, you're not healthy, right? We're not healthy. Meanwhile, they have no idea even how to understand someone's health status, let alone recognize that what healthy means for me may not necessarily mean what's healthy for you. Like we're all different, you know, we're not all robots lined up in a row and, you know, all the same things make sense for all of us.
You know what I mean? Like when you see someone who is overweight or underweight, there it could be signs that like something is, you know, there's something unhealthy happening, right? And that's when you know that this person is, they're not actually concerned about your health, right? Because they haven't asked you any of those questions about like how you are, to really even, you know, 100%. Ascertain it. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, when people go there, it's like, I just, I'm concerned. Like that's really all you can do is kind of laugh and also be a little bit sad. Like it's kind of sad for like to think that this other person, you know, thinks that
judgment on you.
Yeah, and that things feel that conditional for them, because if this is how you're treating me, oh my goodness, I'd hate to know like what your self-talk is.
Oh goodness. You know, I think of Jillian like, Michaels and like God knows what goes in that woman's head. It's terrifying.
Oh, gosh.
I haven't spoken about her in a while. I don't know what's going on with her. But no, but it's true. It is sad. And it is unfortunate. Yeah. And so as being someone who works in the health field, I deal with this weight bias and this fat phobia from medical professionals of my patients all day long. Like I get on the phone with those doctors and I put them in their place because I'm like, my patient has nothing wrong with their labs. What is your problem? What this person is struggling with an eating disorder. We need to help their mental health. We need to get them, you know, medication if that's what's needed. Like those are the things that you should worry about. If my patient comes in for their yearly physical and the only thing that you care about is what that scale says and what that trash BMI says, that's lazy medicine. It's lazy because there's nothing there.
It's hard because you go into the doctor and that's the first thing that they bring up. You know, I had a friend of mine and she went in, she was having back trouble and the doctor is like, you know, brings up her weight. And she's like, I fell down a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
I injured myself, you know, and like you said, it is, it's lazy thinking, lazy medicine.
And this fat phobia in medicine kills people. I had someone on, her name is Amanda, and she was on maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. And she was going from one doctor to the next. She had like terrible stomach pains. She exists in a larger size body. They told her, oh, it's probably good that you can eat. She had fucking cancer. She had colon cancer. And she went on TikTok and she went viral because she was hysterically crying. And then she somehow finally found a doctor that would believe her. And if she didn't do that, she would have died.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? I can't even imagine how a doctor would tell someone, oh, it's great that you can't eat. Like, insane. All those years of schooling and that's what you tell a human being? Because they exist in a larger size body. And so when we look at someone, whether they're 60 pounds or 600 pounds, we cannot determine whether or not that person is healthy just from looking at them. And there's so much about our health that is out of our control. Like there's things where you could be doing all the things and still end up being someone who lives in a larger size body.
Yeah. That's absolutely so. It's I think being able to find a good place for yourself, like, and then just accepting that there's just going to be people who don't understand and they don't see where you're coming from. You know what I mean? Like you're going to sound like the crazy one. And I hate to use the term crazy because it comes off dismissive, but for a lack of a better term, like that is the fact of the matter, that to a large extent, you're gonna sound crazy to people, and just like being okay with that, like,
yeah, for sure. And you know, so even though clients do not come to me to pursue intentional weight loss, doesn't mean I don't care about their lab values. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I've had patients that have, you know, gotten past the eating disorder, the disordered eating, they're in a healthier place mentally, and we start implementing gentle nutrition, right? Because I do practice medical nutrition therapy. I went to school for a really long time, so I know how certain foods interact in the body. So I've had patients that have lowered their cholesterol, managed their diabetes, and lowered their hemoglobin A1C without even getting on a scale. And so their doctors come back to them, they're like, wow, really? You could do that? And I'm like, yes, this is what we do. Because at the end of the day.
Because when you talk about, you know, making healthy choices, moving your body in a way that feels joyful to you, you're going to see you're going to see physical changes.
In theory, correct. You know what I
mean? Yeah. And so it's like, and so that's a very different thing than intentional weight loss, intentionally trying to get to a certain number, right? Yeah. Because if you make these adjustments, you're eating better, you're moving, you know what I mean? You're getting fresh air, like life is going great. And maybe you drop 30, 60 pounds and you're still fat. You know what I mean? So it's,
well,
it's a very different thing. And I think a lot of times we aren't clear with ourselves, you know. I think back to like the number of times where I've said like, it's a lifestyle change. And now I'm like, ooh girl, no, it was just
that's a red flag. That is a red flag. I call it diet culture in disguise.
It was not a lifestyle change. It was a diet. Okay. Yeah. You were dieting.
And at the end of the day, if you are relying on external ways of analyzing how you should be eating, when you should be eating, how much you should be eating, you are not allowing yourself, your own body, to do what it knows best. You know, yeah. So we know like we're all not meant to be the same. All of our body sizes, our body types, shapes, whatever you want to call it, we're not meant to be all the same, right? And like, I'm sure you've seen that like infographic on social media where it shows like all these different women and they're like, all of these women weigh 160 pounds and it looks so different on all of them because the number on the scale doesn't matter. Like it literally doesn't tell me anything. Your BMI, which is like your height divided by your weight, you know, in that equation, what does that tell me? Does that tell me about how much sleep you're getting? Does it tell me how often you're nourishing your body? Does it tell me that you're getting a nice balance of macronutrients? It doesn't tell me anything. And like someone like me who has been in a larger size body since the beginning of time, I was never meant to be a small person. But every time I go to the doctor and all my labs are good, like obviously my doctor knows the deal with me, but like, what do you have to say about that? You know what I mean? You know, yeah. So that's always my argument, my supportive reason. This isn't just like me personally on a crusade because I feel like it. It's because it's true. And the way that medicine and health has been going, it's not doing its job. It's actually excluding people. It's making people feel uncomfortable in their bodies. And whether you are uncomfortable in your body right now, if you had gained 100 pounds, if you had lost 100 pounds or whatever it may be, like you still have to take care of it in whatever way that means for you. You know what I mean? So like our bodies are going to be changing throughout our lifespan. The way that we are, the weight that we are right now isn't going to be the weight that we are in 5 years or 10 years. You don't stay the same exact size forever. And anyone who does think that that's true, I would really ask them to kind of reevaluate their relationship with food and movement, because if you are to a T sticking to certain numbers of and burning a certain amount of calories, that is taking up way too much mental space. Like you could be writing books, you could be singing songs, like you could be doing all sorts of other things than just like obsessing over being the smallest version of yourself.
Yeah. It's it makes me think of Toni Morrison. The way that she described racism, she called it a distraction, right? Mm-hmm. Because while you're trying to prove your worth, it's distracted you from what you were meant to do, you know, on this planet. And I think you could apply that to
100%
other aspects of human identity, whether it be race or gender or, you know, sexual orientation. And I think also when it comes to our bodies, right? Like if you're trying to prove that you're not that kind of fat person, like I'm fat, but I yada, 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 or you're constantly trying to prove that you deserve to be loved and to feel sexy and all of those things. If you're waiting for that magical weight to happen so that you can be and feel those things that it's completely distracted you from who and what you were meant to be, you know, here on earth.
It's literally so sad. Like
it is. Once you get over being maybe frustrated or angry, you get down to it. It is very sad, right? To think that there are huge swaths of people who think that I'm not worthy of self-respect. I don't get to feel confident. I don't get to be loved by another person. I don't get to enjoy sex. I don't get to do, you know, I guess not even buy clothes at Nike because I'm fat, right? Like, and it's, that is sad because what could I possibly do to get you to value me, right? And how kind of effed up is it to put me in a position to prove my humanity to you?
Because I feel human rights.
I'm just supposed to get that off tops, like just because I'm another human being.
Existing in a body, that's all. We're just bodies floating around on this rock, going God knows where, for how long, who knows.
Listen, man.
And so, you know, I think a big part of this anti-diet space always tends to leave out the fact of the matter that this thin idealization, this Eurocentric white idealization of a body, right, is rooted in racism.
Oh yeah.
And
there's this really great quote. I want to say that it's Dr. Neely Fuller who says that until you understand white supremacy, everything else will only confuse you. Right. And so it's like so many of these conversations that we're having, they are political in nature and they are rooted in white supremacy.
Yes.
But I think, you know, I think sometimes we're afraid to take the conversation there because it can sometimes alienate or other people feel alienated or feel uncomfortable.
The white fragility always shows having that conversation about this stuff. Yeah.
But it totally is. Those things go together like peas and carrots.
When you study the history of just the body positivity movement, right? Which we haven't really gotten into, but like from the get-go, like there were individuals on social media who were referring to me as like a body positive person.
Sorry, you froze a little bit, so I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, in terms of like the body positive movement, I have always like steered clear from using that as a term that I associate with myself. Like I'll use the hashtags because hello, we're all trying to get seen on here. And social media tends to not like individuals in larger size bodies showing their stretch marks and their bodies, or, you know, when you look up the body positive hashtag, it's mostly thin white women.
Yes.
Who take up.
Listen, it's like the Gilmore Girls situation where, and I love the show. I rewatch it, you know, every however many years, but it's like, oh, look at me, I'm so skinny, but I eat like a crazy person. Oh. Watch me binge. You know what I mean? It's only cute because they are thin. You know what I mean? And so you're absolutely right that it's when you already fit into the beauty standard,
yes,
it's okay for you to call attention to problems, and it's okay to show your bloated belly, and it's okay
for you
to
show your didn't see how high I rolled my eyes.
Like people think you're brave but when you're fat and you do it, it doesn't always get the same
no.
reaction.
It's so annoying and unfortunate, and I do believe that there are people in that space who genuinely don't recognize the harm that they're doing. But like me, like whether I try to suck in my stomach or not, like I'm still fat. And it's always been that way. I have rolls just standing. I don't need to contort. And I'm literally just showing myself, contorting myself to make myself have rolls and saying that that's beautiful. Like, of course, all bodies are beautiful. And I think like part of the issue that these people have with like, oh, well, like, what are you trying to say? We don't have eating disorders. What are you trying to say? We don't have body image issues. No, we are just saying that like you can go into a store and buy yourself whatever you want. Like you can fit into those clothes. Whereas other people literally are like ordering stuff online, hoping that the three different sizes that they ordered of like the same item, because we're not sure what's going to, you know, go over our butts and clothes, are going to fit. So we're just like, we want basic stuff. We just want to be able to buy cute stuff. That's all. Like,
how dare you? How dare you? Want fat and cute? I don't think so.
Yeah, no, but it's true. And something that I learned throughout my lifetime was that like, I used to be in a much larger body than I am now at some point. And something that's like so interesting to me, and I don't know if a lot of other people can relate to this, is that I have felt the same in my body, regardless of whether I was heavier than I am now or smaller than I am now. Like when I'm naked standing there, I never felt a difference. Does that make sense? And even,
you know, I feel like it's one of those things, it's only in comparison to other people do those things ever kind of come into my head. I don't want to speak for other people, but I kind of feel you on that. Like when I'm around the house and I got my t-shirt and my undies on, and I pass by the mirror, I'm like, okay, you're cute. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not thinking those negative thoughts. Mm-hmm. It's only when I start to compare myself to other people do I start to second guess any of that, or that I start to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it
it's hard for sure.
It is. It is hard. And I think, to kind of go back to what you were saying, I think there are women with smaller bodies who genuinely are trying to make a point, right? Because women of all varieties and shapes and sizes mm-hmm. deal with, you know, trying to fit beauty standards. And so it's like, you know, I think some folks are struggling with making space for yeah. for other people, and recognizing that you know, other folks they're just having a different experience. It doesn't invalidate your experience, right. But it's like there are folks that they're having a different experience. They're being, you know, demeaned, and that you know, sometimes you have to yield the floor.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To those voices. So it doesn't mean that like you're not struggling. It just means that this just isn't your particular struggle, right? Like Black Lives Matter doesn't mm-hmm. mean that other people's lives don't matter. Yes. So I think, is that willful ignorance? You know what I mean? Like, is this people being obtuse on purpose, or, you know, sometimes I don't know. Sometimes I don't know. It's you're tough. Ignorant. Yeah.
I mean, I can go on a very long tangent in terms of, and not that that tangent isn't an important conversation that I think still needs to be had, in terms of the continued and inherent racism of this world, this country that we live in. I think coming from my place of privilege and where I live, seeing the people who live their lives as if nothing happens, as if it doesn't even make a difference. And I remember those weeks in 2020, that summer, and how it was part of the real downfall of my mental health, where it just progressed worse and worse, because I was so angry and upset that like other people are living their lives as if nothing is wrong. And we see these heinous acts continued over and over and over again. And I just got like sucked in, and I'm glad that I did, because I think it's important. And for people who cannot possibly understand what that's like, but like, as we are heading towards like June again, yeah. I'm like, where's all the black squares that everyone posted? I don't see them. This is 3 years later.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's important to recognize, and especially for the listeners to know, that like all of this stuff is related, you know, in one way, shape, or form. When we talk about the demonization of cultural cuisine, from foods from different ethnicities, and being told like, oh, well, no, like you should have kale. You should have your, you know, your, I can't even think of it right now.
And quinoa.
Oh my God. I mean, whoever loves it.
I realized I actually have an intolerance to quinoa.
That's a good reason not to have a food. Those are the only
things. You know, a while back I made a post where I was like just apologizing to all of the food that I ruined by trying to make like the healthy version.
Oh, I need to go back and find this post.
Nobody cauliflower did not ask me
no.
to turn it into rice, because rice
no.
already exists. And I should have just had the fried rice, you know?
Yeah.
I was talking to my auntie, and she was she was talking about replacing her coffee creamer with with the protein drink.
I could say it depends, but continue.
I've seen people make sort of like a protein coffee type of situation, but I was just like, auntie, like, whatever you feel like is happening with your health, I guarantee you the creamer that you're using for your coffee in the morning
is not the straw that broke the camel's back. No, but
baby girl.
But unfortunately, that's what happens. You see a segment on Good Morning America of a health expert, Gwyneth Paltrow, saying like, I don't eat food all day, but I drink bone broth and then I get, you know, IVs because I'm so like depleted. So then the average folks who like maybe have, you know, elevated cholesterol, hypertension, pre-diabetes, they're looking at that and they're like, but that's, so I should be doing that. And that's just not it.
So yeah, like you can have your cup of coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
How about maybe, like you said, not skipping breakfast?
Yes, or, that's a big one.
You know, like, you know, it's not the creamer, I promise you.
No, I mean, and you know, so okay, I'm not even going to go on that tangent, but yes, 100% what you're saying, I 100%
agree. So I just wish that I could go back and like undo all of the, like, you know, strange healthy concoctions that I you know, whipped up in the kitchen, and I wish that I could just, you know, portion out,
go back to like eating and enjoying whatever that may have been. And, you know, the more we restrict, the more we feel out of control around food, and the more we feel the need to have it.
Yeah.
And it becomes like this like special little diamond in the sky where we're like, that's what I want, that's what I want. And I'm like, it's just a freaking Oreo. Not a big deal. Now, to get to that place, I completely understand. It takes time and a lot of work. But at the end of the day, you're going to realize that it's just an Oreo.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it kind of goes back to what you were saying about, like, you know, I don't have to contort my body. Like, I got rolls and I'm just standing here. And that's kind of when it came to, like, what to wear, like how I dressed myself. It was a similar mindset of, like, wearing the shirt untucked. It's not like people are like, where'd your belly go? Like, you know what I mean? Like, the shirt being untucked didn't like, girl, you're still fat. So it's like, I might as well tuck my shirt in if that's what I'm feeling, you know? I might as well put shorts on during the summertime, because nobody's gonna think like, oof, until you put the shorts on, I didn't even know. I didn't even know that you were fat. You're hiding it so well.
I literally put up a post about something like that, like, wear the shorts. And for me, that's been a very difficult thing.
Yes.
Like, because, like, you know, in the summer it's hot, and right now in my gym, they don't understand that we don't need the heat on. So it's freaking hot. So I have like a bunch of, like, you know, like biker shorts of varying lengths. Now they're not short by any means, but like short for me, you know? Yeah. And, you know, I'm walking around the gym and, like, I mean, I'm sure there's assholes who stare at me and may think one thing or another because that's just who they are. But like, the world did not end. The gym did not crumble around me.
What's so funny is that most people aren't paying attention because they're caught up in their own, you know, issues and insecurities. And the people who were going to say something or who were going to make a funny face, they were going to do that whether you put on sweatpants, whether you put on a track suit, or you came in booty butt naked. Like they were yeah. like they were going to do that anyway, and that's not my problem. That's
no.
that's your problem. You know
I
what
agree.
I mean? But it really is unfortunate though, because it deters a lot of folks yeah. from going into the gym. And from trying things that they
yeah.
probably would really enjoy, but they are worried about how they're going to be received and treated, and haven't necessarily built up, you know,
yeah,
the sort of internal strength to be able to tune out that outside noise.
It's tough. And like something that I've always been aware of is that like I'm generally the largest person, woman. Maybe I'm only the woman in the lifting area, but if I am not the only woman, I'm definitely like the largest woman there. And I kind of just like always, it's like a part of how I just experience life. Like I don't really give it too much thought, but it's like still there. And it shouldn't even be something that I think about, but it yeah. is.
It can be hard in the gym, because, you know, it's just not always the most welcoming place. And it's like, okay, you shamed me to get my fat ass into the gym. Now I'm here. And there's somebody recording me while I'm on, you know, the yeah. stair climber or whatever it is, so they can post on social media. So it's like you really are damned if you do and damned if you
yeah people you are don't, just you know? Disgusting. Like 99.9% of people just really, like, if we all have to flee to an island to save ourselves, like, those people are not invited. They're part of the people who I'm not inviting. And it's just, I think these conversations are important. And there are a lot of other individuals who are doing this work, and I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for you for showing up and taking up space.
Thank you.
Of course. And I think, like, it just makes me more motivated to keep sharing these types of sentiments and helping as many people yeah. as I can recognize, like, you can exist in a larger size body and be completely at peace with who you are, and prioritizing health in whatever way that you feel like you have yeah. the capacity to, and recognize that there are things that are out of your control. Like, I have polycystic ovary syndrome. Yeah. It's something called PCOS. I'm not sure if you're familiar. Yeah. I'm always going to have that no matter what. And it's just part of who I am. So that means that I am on top of my hemoglobin A1C. I look at my hormones every 6 months, you know, and there are just certain things, like I try to prioritize getting in enough fiber and eating as many vegetables and fruits as I can, and balancing out my meals for what benefits me. But does that mean that, like, I don't eat a cookie or two or three if I don't, you know? And I hate using that comparison, because they're like, oh, it's just a cookie, you could eat the cookie. But like, what if you want to eat five cookies? Well, then you can still eat five cookies. Like, I'm telling you that it's okay. But the point is,
listen, who opens up a pack of cookies and is like, I'm just gonna have the one. No, but like, come on. That's ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
I feel like you need several cookies.
Of course, if you're having it with a beverage, then
listen,
that's another thing.
I am partial, and these are sort of like, I, you know, my friends make fun of me. They're like old people snacks, but I am partial to a ginger snap. And
pretty good.
Fig Newton, okay?
I do love a good Fig Newton.
I am a
grandma, though.
In my
I'm actually
jar.
Like 73 years old. I'd be so happy. Like, literally, that's how I live my life.
Agreed.
Like the time that I go to the gym is when like all the like elderly retired individuals go. It's great.
You I'm know, I used happy to be with them.
Class.
I took a yoga class that was like that, and it was
so good.
It was most. It was like older people, and then like stay-at-home moms. You know what I mean? And it was like a class that I could only take, like if we had a holiday off, you know, like a Monday off from school or something like that. And I would go, and it was a really great class, but that's all who was in there. And those older folks there in there, man, I go walk around the lake and they are lapping me. And I'm just like, okay, I hope that when I am 70, I'm still moving.
I love that. And honestly, like when we actually like look at the research, that isn't terribly, bias, which most research unfortunately is, but like when we look at populations that experience like the best care of like of life, like long, generally like quote unquote healthy lives, it's that they walk, they garden, they have a glass of wine. You know, like that's literally what, like when you go to like these places across the world where they have like populations where like the lifespan is like 95 years old, is that they do simple things like that. They rest, they take vacations, you know, all these things that like we don't necessarily do.
So over the, and so then it like two things, it opens up how you define healthy, right? But what it makes me think of is over the pandemic, I came up with this checklist, and I would use it with my students, and they think I'm you know, Looney Tunes, but I came up with this checklist. I'm like, y'all, like these are the seven things. If you're doing these seven things in a day, then life is good. Did you poop? Mm-hmm. And that's the part they're just like, what are you talking about?
Yep.
Like, can you stop being gross? And I'm like, come on.
Pooping tells me a lot. Pooping, how many times my patients poop, how long they go with or without pooping, tells me a lot. So yes.
So did you poop? Did you get some fresh air? Move your body, express gratitude, make your bed. Make a to-do list, and drink some water. And I was like, those seven things, if you're doing those seven things in a day,
you're already in a good position.
Like that's
I love what that else so do you need much. To do. That's so great. And those things are taken for granted, and those simple things, like when I have If a new client that works with me doesn't have an active eating disorder, and they're just like coming to me lost with like having, you know, gone from diet to diet, and they're like, I don't know what's up, what's down. I'm just like, the first thing that we're going to do is for you to start having three meals a day and one to two snacks. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, we need to get your body used to adequate nourishment continuously. Because when you've gone so long with avoiding eating breakfast, not having snacks because they're empty calories or they're bad, quote unquote, you need to eat throughout the day. And however much that portioning is up to you and your body. And it takes time to figure that out. But just doing simple things like getting enough sleep, drinking some water, getting some sort of joyful movement, whatever that might be. That could be chasing your kids around. That could be gardening in the backyard. That could be walking your dog around the block. Like whatever, it doesn't have to be in a gym. It could be dancing around with your siblings or whatever. Like it's just some sort of joyful movement. Those are the most important things.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes just around the apartment, it's like, okay, I got up this morning and I did laundry and you know what I mean? So like I've been moving, and I think that's also part of it, is like showing people that it doesn't take, like it's not a huge production. You don't have to go out and buy all of these gadgets. You don't need all of these, you know, bells mm-hmm. and whistles. That it could be as simple as turning on the, you know, Spotify and
love it
and dancing to your favorite song, or like getting up and doing chores for mm-hmm. 45 minutes, you know, like diet culture has convinced us that like things have to look this one way, you know, and they just don't.
Yeah, it robbed us of so much happiness, and it took up so much mental space, and like we really should be able to sue it, but unfortunately there's just it's really hard to get to the bottom of like who exactly we can sue for emotional distress and trauma, but it's true. And so I love how you
sue Dr. Oz. And then I will sue.
Yeah, he's definitely number one. Jillian Michaels, the owners of Noom, because Noom is a diet. Weight Watchers or WW.
Hearing those, the Noom commercials, and because that's like one of the popular sponsors on a lot of podcasts. So I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts.
And oh my God, same. Okay, we'll talk about we'll get into that, but and that is one of the reasons why, like, for this podcast I don't have any sponsors ever. I don't make any money from this. I make $0 because A, I want to provide great content for free to people who may not have access to working with me or another dietitian or another health professional. And B, because I don't want none of that. I don't want to hear, oh, HelloFresh, these meals, if you want the healthy versions that are under 700 calories, approved by a dietitian, giving my profession a bad name. I'm not working with you, HelloFresh or Daily Harvest. Like, I hear those things and I'm like, it's like nails on a chalkboard. And I'm like, so you know what? I don't take anything. I get supplement companies all the time emailing me. Oh, we heard your podcast. I just don't respond. I know that's probably not professional, but I don't care. I don't have time in my life to deal with that.
Well, because I think it's all of these things that on their own could be really good. But once capitalism gets into the mix, it turns into this weird thing. So like intermittent fasting. I do intermittent fasting, but it's like, you know, I stop eating around 7, 8 p.m.-ish, and then I go to bed, and I wake up, and I break my fast around 7 a.m., right? That's it. Like, that's...
I would call that a normal practice of just going to sleep and not eating in your...
Yes, but that's... But it is intermittent fasting, but unfortunately, people... you know, they hear about their favorite celebrity who's like, I don't eat until 3 p.m. And,
so
you know,
stupid.
And people,
it's terrible.
People
it's
using it horrible. to lose weight when really, what is, I think it's like in, like, it's in a lot of like ancient Asian practices, that like the idea of fasting for several hours in a day would be great if that's all you were doing. Like, you're not meant to work your full day, pick up your kid, right? So it's like people take these concepts and then they take them out of, they take them out of cultural context, and they use them to make money off of them. And
I think I get it. I totally get it. And like my joke with like the intermittent fasting is like, I go to sleep and I don't eat, and then I wait until the next morning and then I eat.
Yeah.
So I don't put, so some nights like I eat my last meal at 7, some nights I eat my last meal at 5:30. But like, I don't like put a time on it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I'm listening to what my body is telling me. And sometimes it's 9:30 and I feel hungry and I need to eat something, and that's okay too.
But I think like what happens is that instead of focusing on the practice of giving your body time to do what it needs to do, to process food and to turn over cells and do all of that scientific stuff, right? Instead, it becomes this sort of like weight loss trick.
Yeah, of course. They're like, shove this water bottle in your right ear and count to 50, and then you're going to lose 20 pounds in 6 weeks.
Oh gosh.
I mean, that's literally how ridiculous a lot of this stuff sounds. And it's so disgusting and unfortunate that people are desperate and they are constantly seeking, and I don't blame them.
No.
I don't blame them at all. But coming from where I came from and recognizing that even in the midst of my eating disorder, when I was at probably like whatever that lowest weight was, I was still fat. Like, I was still a big person. So like, it's just like insane. Yes. So it's like, I can't, like, my body's just not meant to do it. And that's okay. And being at peace with that doesn't mean that I feel so comfortable every second of my life. And it doesn't mean that I don't have these negative thoughts. It just means that, like, I'm at peace with it and it's okay.
You know, and it's kind of like you were saying about things being out of your control, because so much of your genetic makeup, your physical makeup is out of your control, right? Like, you've got narrow hips and wide shoulders, baby girl. Like, what could you do? Like, there's nothing that you can do about that, right? And then here comes, you know, some jerk wanting to make you feel badly about the fact that, like, all of your weight goes to your belly. But it's like,
some people, what are you genetically predisposed to that? And also, not only just genetics, but like your history, not you, but like our history of weight cycling, the losing and gaining weight, the dieting, that all plays into a role of why we are in the space that we're in right now. And you can't go back and undo that.
Yeah. So like, I think making comments about folks' physical appearance, I think we have to learn. It's kind of like you were saying, ick, like it the line between being a pervert and, like, you know, like it's a thin line, because that's what you sound like when you're talking about people's, you know, bodies this way. It's, and like,
just stop. That's like the bottom line,
right? Like, because you don't know what's going on, and it's not something. Even when somebody is like, you deem another person attractive, it's like, well, they didn't do anything. Like, they're just, their mom's DNA and their dad's DNA came together this way. And they've got that face. And I don't know. So however you feel about what a person looks like.
No, it's true. Like,
It's completely out of their control to a large extent.
That's why, like, what we look like is like the least interesting thing about us.
I was just telling my friend that, like, listen, in my 20s, hats off to the men who got me. Like, you got me. You complimented me, and you got me. All right. You know, I fell for it.
It was a good time.
Right. And now, as somebody who's like almost 40, I'm like, okay, thanks. Like, a compliment about, like, my appearance does not hit the same.
Like, as if it was like, me?
You know?
What?
Like, it is the least interesting thing about me.
It's so true.
And so a compliment from a random stranger as I'm, you know, trying to go about my daily life is like, it's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things is watching women turn men down in public. Like, I don't know. I just get a very, like, This makes me chuckle. I'm like, leave that woman alone.
I agree.
She's really she's just trying to put her stuff in her in the trunk of her car.
Like I mean this could go on to the conversation of like the sexualization of women, how like us just existing is like, oh well, like does that mean that you want attention? Oh, you happen to glance in the same direction as me. Does that mean that you want me to come over and talk to you? Like, I don't know.
No, actually. it means the exact opposite. If we're being honest. I want you to not talk to me.
I feel you. I've kind of always felt like that. I mean, and I'm saying this with a grain of salt, and I don't mean this to you or my lovely listeners, but like, I don't want to talk to anyone. Like, that's my motto. Like, just please leave me alone.
It's this, but it's like when you're thinking about like the attention of getting the attention of a stranger, right? Because that's what's different. Now, if this is someone who I like and love and someone who has made an effort to get to know me, then that changes everything.
Yeah.
But attention from strangers, is especially when you are fat.
Yeah.
And I'm saying this as a fat, you know, heterosexual woman, mm-hmm. right? Is like people look at you like you're supposed to be super excited about it, like just over the moon that someone would have the, you know,
the kindness of their soul.
They to, reached to, in you so know, deep to say pull that it you're out. Pretty, or and it's like, you know, that woman over there, the thin attractive woman you tried to holler at first, she didn't want you, and guess what, I don't want you either. I'm also not interested, and I think that really bothers folks. Like they think we're supposed to be grateful, and it's like, sir, you're not gonna get your hands on my tax returns. This is not what's about to happen.
It's honestly true. It's just the world that we live in is so interesting, and the rise of social media and where it is right now, it really, I think, amplified these individuals to feel the like, because they're hiding behind their keyboard so they can slide into your messages or your comments and say these things. And it's like, I don't want you to say these things to me. Please leave me alone.
Right, whether it's somebody being like overtly sexual, or someone who hops on TikTok to say that they don't want to date fat girls.
Oh, and it's God.
Like, okay, all right.
Good for you, sir. Presumably a white man.
We weren't checking for you to begin with. It's so funny because they always look unfortunate. You know what I mean? Like they're always the man with like crazy jacked up hairline, in an outfit you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy, who gets up in the morning to tell you, you know, to do their best Joe Rogan impersonation.
Oh my God.
And tell you that they don't want to date you. And it's like,
the entitlement of individuals is always astounding. It really is. It's just insane. Like, I'm sure like his, you know, DMs aren't blowing up with women asking him for dates, but he finds the need to go on to someone else's page who literally has not even acknowledged his existence to tell them that.
Yeah.
Bizarre. Well,
you know, I mean, I think there are just some folks who refuse to take responsibility for, you know, like it couldn't possibly be them, right? They couldn't.
Yeah.
the problem. Women are the problem.
Of course.
And it, specifically these, you know, it's fat women who, you know, who are the problem.
It's just, I have no words.
Yeah.
I really don't. It's just disgusting and insane. And again, I just wish people would just leave us alone. Let us live. Let us do what we want to do in peace.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's what's so odd, right? Is that like fat people aren't saying, I've never heard a fat woman say like, I want you to want to date me. It's like, we're just asking, can you
leave us
not
alone.
Disrespect us? Yeah,
you know, just literally, I mean? Leave us alone.
Like, that's could you maybe treat us like human beings, right? Like, yeah. Whether or not you date me is irrelevant, because, you know,
that's not even
there is no accounting for taste.
and it goes back to like individuals in larger bodies wanting to the freedom to just exist the way that they are, move in the way that they want, eat in a way that makes them feel good, and not receive such vitriol from other people who were just angry seeing someone in a larger body who's existing. That's not, I don't know what they expect us to do.
Well, I think that when people see, when folks see fat people happy and confident and whole, when they see fat folks who have let go of all of those beauty mm-hmm. standards, it freaks them out, because yeah. they've been living, that's how they've been identifying that, you know, their own life. And
yeah.
it's what they've been clinging to. And so if they accept that this is, you know, right, then it would like throw everything that they're doing into question. And I don't think that a lot of people are ready to let that go. And so instead of doing sort of like any reflection, it's easier to like point the finger at fat folks.
And that's kind of like what you see with Lizzo, right? She's this like amazingly talented human being who does these amazing shows, playing the flute, dancing in heels. Like, I can barely walk down the stairs without worrying about like falling over myself, you know?
Listen,
God forbid I have to carry more than my pug in a water bottle. And they're so angry, and they're just, everyone's like, Jillian Michaels, oh well, you know, she's pre-diabetic, or if she doesn't have diabetes yet. Like, what? There are many, many, many skinny people, thin people, small people who have type 2 diabetes.
Listen. And as someone who, like, I am at, you know, teaching in high schools, I've seen what these kids are eating. And so I know that a person's health and like their size, you just can't, like,
of course not.
Some of my amazing, wonderful young female students are, you know, the only thing keeping them alive is an iced latte and like pastries, you know what I mean? Like, that's it. They're not actually eating, you know, real meals. Healthy foods. Yeah. So like the idea that somebody could and see anything other than a beautiful, talented woman is doing
great things, but it angers people so much. And I just don't understand, like, there's so many other things you could be doing with your time. Like, why is that the thing that you feel the need to, you know, give your opinion on?
Yeah.
Let's talk about like the new iced coffee flavor at Dunkin' Donuts. Like, I don't even know what it is, but I'm sure they have one. Like that, okay, yeah. Maybe your opinion would make sense when it comes to that, but like it's just so annoying. It's really, really frustrating. And obviously, like, I'm boiling it down to a very like singular concept of like it's so annoying, but it's like I don't know what to say, but people just need to just stop people.
It
obviously
is
not the listeners, because you guys aren't a part of that. You guys understand what we're talking about, but it's just, and maybe this is like what we'll like close the episode with, is like, if you are someone who's listening to this podcast and you are not someone in a larger body, right? Like, you may not be able to relate to a lot of the stuff that we've spoken about, but like, you can be someone who is an ally, who can stand up in those conversations that people have and say like kind of shut it down. You know, when the conversation is gearing towards some sort of diet or some sort of weight loss thing or whatever, they're commenting on a larger person's body, to say like, let's not talk about that. Let's talk about something actually interesting. You know, try to, you know, and I understand it may be uncomfortable and it may not be something that everyone is comfortable doing, but that definitely helps shift the conversation. And some people don't even realize that that's what they're doing. You know, like, they may be giving their opinions and not recognizing how harmful it is.
Yeah, I agree with you. And thinking about like bringing it back to like the fitness part of it, if you are someone in a smaller body and you are a personal trainer, you are, you know, into fitness, showing people a variety of ways to do exercises and not making it come across as like something's wrong because you can't do it this way, because you need to use a block or a strap. It's like, it's the same stretch. You're getting the same benefits, whether you modify it or not, you know, like, one of the things that stands out to me is like, when you're setting up to do any sort of exercise and people are like hip width, you know, stand with your,
I mean, I have to do like 3 times apart from my hips, because there's no way.
And I'm like, no, I've got to make room for my belly. I'm so sorry about it. Like, I got to make room for my belly. So my stance, like when I squat, my stance is a little bit wider than traditional, right? Because if I try to do it in the way that you're telling me, I would hurt myself. So I think, you know, those are ways that we can, you know, even if you're not somebody who identifies this as fat, there are all these different ways that you can help support folks within and without, you know, the industry.
I have a host of individuals in this space who are in larger size bodies that I think would be beneficial for individuals to be following, including yourself. So I will, of course, leave all of your social media handles in the show notes, which is like that little box that you click and it like opens up, and then it has like all the links that I always leave. And so Erica's info will be in there. So please go and give her a follow. I will, you know, link some other individuals. I've been doing that lately. It's just so that everyone can diversify their feed. So even if you aren't an individual in a larger size body, I think it would be definitely beneficial for you to expose yourself and normalize yourself seeing individuals in larger size bodies moving their bodies joyfully. And Erica, any closing thoughts for the listeners?
My closing thought would be that if you are thinking about powerlifting, if you're thinking about weight training, but you are scared because you think that you are going to turn into some sort of bodybuilder type of, you know what I mean? I just want to say, nope, that's not going to happen.
Sorry, I didn't mean to like start cracking up, but like... The heavier
it's a fear. I think a lot of women, they fear that. And so I think there are a lot of women who would enjoy you know, powerlifting and would enjoy weight training and seeing what their bodies can do and seeing how strong they are. And so just know that that's never the kind of training you'd have to do to look like a bodybuilder is
very different. And you'd probably need to go on some steroids as well.
It's very different. It's never going to happen. You know, for most of us, it's a very intentional process. Right. And so I just want to encourage folks, if you've been thinking about it, you know, you've seen someone trying something out at the gym, take the video, save the video, take it back to your trainer, take it back to the gym and show them and give it a try, because part of joyful movement is like trying new things and taking some risks. So those are my closing words.
Erica, thank you so much for coming on the show and for this whole conversation. It's been so enjoyable and so enlightening. And I hope that you guys who are listening are enjoying it as well. And we'll have to have Erica come back because I'm sure there's more things we can talk about.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will see you next week.